Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the podcast author or individuals participating in the podcast and do not represent those of iHeartMedia, Tenderfoot TV, or their employees. This podcast also contains subject matter which may not be suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
The True was a secondary figure. He was responsible for bringing drugs and girls at the parties. Nihul was the boss. The True was more on the side.
These are the words of Regina Loof, read by a translator. When De True was arrested, she said that she recognized his face on the news. She also recognized Michel Nihul, who was also arrested on suspicion of involvement. Regina Loof claimed that she had been abused by Nihul as a young teenager and had witnessed terrible abuse of others at his hands.
From the age of 12, my grandmother forced me to be a prostitute. I was brought to orgies. Everyone was drinking a lot of alcohol. There were sometimes other children there. Nihul was very often there with his wife. I remember Jean-Michel Nihul as a very cruel man. He abused children in a very sadistic way. Sometimes, during these parties, they would put us outside in a large garden. The adults would chase us, and whoever caught one of us could do whatever they wanted.
A psychopath is somebody who understands emotions.
And I told them it is very exceptional that somebody abducts two children at the same time.
Should have been the end of it in 1986. But my God, it was just the beginning.
I think Belgium was a paradise for perverts in those days.
Welcome to Le Monstre. I'm your host, Matt Graves. You'll recall that after the initial arrest of De True, his wife Michel Martin, and accomplice Michel Lelièvre, there is another arrest of a man named Michel Nihul. The arrest of Nihul was the beginning of two narratives in this country, which still persist today. One in which De True and his accomplices were an isolated group, and another in which De True was part of something much larger, a child sex trafficking network. The isolated group narrative was widely accepted by Belgian law enforcement and the mainstream media. However, there are several disturbing facts that point to the narrative of a larger child trafficking network with powerful connections. Michel Nihul, with all of his power and influence, lies at the heart of this second narrative. You'll recall that telephone records showed that Nihul had a flurry of phone calls with both De True and his accomplice Lelièvre leading up to the last disappearance of Letitia Deleuze, and that he gave them about $15,000 worth of ecstasy pills on the day after she was kidnapped. During early interrogations, De True and Lelièvre spoke a lot about Nihul. They said he was a hustler with a lot of influence who organized orgies. De True said that Nihul told him that sadomasochist orgies were the most profitable, and that Nihul was a fervent sadomasochist himself. It was an open secret that Nihul regularly organized orgies. Even people close to him, and in fact his own lawyer, admitted that Nihul frequently participated in secret sex parties. He described himself as a man of all seasons and was the consummate networker, involved in both business and politics. From various business ventures to public relations to political campaign consulting, Nihul was a man of influence with connections across the spectrum. He even had his own radio show in Brussels. Several people close to Nihul described him as an excellent salesman and a show-off who liked to spin big and drink and party excessively. With several bankruptcies to his name, Nihul also had a rap sheet with convictions for fraud, bad checks, and breach of trust. Based on records showing frequent telephone conversations between Dutroux, Lelièvre, and Nihul leading up to the kidnapping of Letitia, and the early testimony of Dutroux and Lelièvre about Nihul's possible involvement, he was arrested and his face was plastered all over the media. Regina Louf, the girl whose words you heard at the start of this episode, had a friend who contacted police to explain that she knew someone who had concrete information about Dutroux and the corrupt businessman, Michel Nihul. The friend she was referring to was Regina Louf. Regina didn't initially want to testify, but she was eventually convinced to speak with police on record.
Well, the reaction was what we've seen with Dutroux. That's bad. There's like 2, 4, 6 kids that were abducted, 4 were dead, 2 were still found back alive. That was terrible for Belgium. But if what Regina was saying was even half of it true, it would be 10 times worse.
This is the voice of Rudy Hoskins, who is the investigative lead on the team assigned to interview Regina Louf. Rudy Hoskins is currently a partner at one of the prestigious Big Four global accounting and consulting firms, where he's a confidence leader in forensic services. Earlier in his career, Rudy was a Belgian federal police officer, or gendarme, for 16 years. In 1996, he and his colleagues Aimé Bill, Patrick de Batz, and Philippe Huppé were assigned by Judge Conrad to interview anonymous witnesses who had come forward after seeing the arrests of Dutroux and Nihul on television. To protect the identities of witnesses, the police called them X1, X2, X3, and so on. X1 was Regina Louf, who claimed she had been abused by Dutroux and Nihul.
Then we had that first interview, and then we sat together. Okay, what's what we're going to do with that? This lady is completely crazy. That was our first assessment.
Right.
All the things she is telling us, this is not possible. Cannot be true. And also the names he was quoting were people of high society.
Yeah.
Politicians, heads of, captains of industry, magistrates, police people. So this cannot be true. This is too much.
Right.
That was a bit the first feeling, I think.
And when did you start to believe her?
When we started finding the first evidences, what we said that we could confirm that in the field or through public records or to whatever.
The story of Regina Louf is both perplexing and tragic. She was sexually abused by adults as a young girl and into her teenage years. For obvious reasons, this affected her psychologically, and she showed clear signs of mental instability during her interviews.
And then she started talking about cases where she was not only abused, but where she also witnessed other, I would say, friends or children that were abused and even murdered. And then when we heard murder, we said, okay, that's interesting, because if there's a murder, there must have been a body, there must be a cold case somewhere. So talk to us about that.
She described 2 horrifying experiences where she had witnessed the abuse and murder of other young girls. Hoskins and his colleagues drilled into her accounts of these experiences in a series of long and grueling interviews, while Hoskins gathered details and investigated possible links to unsolved cases. Because the timeline and description aligned with an unsolved abuse and murder case. To understand this cold case, we have to go back to 1984, 12 years before the bodies of Julie, Melissa, Anne, and Efia were found murdered on the properties of Marc Dutroux.
Lorsqu'on doit prendre un peu plus loin à droite.
Okay.
It happened less than 2 miles from where I live today. A young journalist, Jean Savigna, is helping me with this part of the project. We wanted to see where this crime was committed almost 40 years ago. In 1984, this was the site of a place known as La Champignonnière, which means mushroom farm in French.
You can see, if you look at the pictures, actually you can see, that could be that tree.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary place.
Yeah, these pictures are really scary. They're giving me the chills.
The mushroom farm had been abandoned in 1973.
Yeah, it's here.
The only pictures left of this place are black and white, and they have a sinister feel to them. Maybe it's just because I know what happened here.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
It was cold and dark on the evening of February 13th, 1984, when a local passerby noticed smoke coming from the abandoned mushroom farm in the commune of Oudegem in Brussels. The passerby called the fire department to report the smoke in case there was a fire that needed to be put out. When fire crews arrived, they determined the smoke was coming from one of the old basements of the mushroom farm. It was a routine call, and it didn't appear that anyone was in danger, so they sent a small team to go check out the source of the fire. After weaving through a labyrinth of underground hallways, they arrived in a basement where they found a heap of crates and trash on fire and proceeded to extinguish it. When the flames were put out, they started to separate the debris to make sure everything was extinguished. One of the firemen noticed a strange object under the debris that didn't look like it belonged there. It looked distinctly human, but was twisted into an odd shape. To their horror, they realized it was indeed a partially burned and mutilated body. The victim's arms and feet had been tied behind their back and looped around their neck into an arching position with metal wire. The hands were missing and the legs were damaged. Initial responders said that they saw a nail planted into one of the severed hands. It was declared a crime scene, and investigators quickly determined that it was likely a teenage girl. As they sifted through the scene, they found jewelry and a partially burned school notebook that enabled them to identify the victim. It was 16-year-old Christine Van Hees. Only hours before, her parents had called the police to declare her missing when she didn't return home from school the same day. The autopsy determined that she died prior to when the fire was set, and that she had been tortured and raped before being strangled to death with electric wires. Again, the former gendarme, Rudy Hoskins.
Yeah, the things she told us, she couldn't have known without having been there or witnessed it.
Regina Loof's account of the abuse and murder of a girl named Christine was strikingly similar to the circumstances of the infamous murder of Christine Van Hees at the Champignonnière.
And then we said, okay, shit, this girl is really talking. And then we went more in depth, asking for more details. Like the Champignonnière, she described the house, how she went in there. And we even asked for details. If for example, if you go into a house, okay, normally in a house, you go stairs up and then you go in. In that case, you went like stairs down and then you go in. So it was like specific things we could check. So we found old pictures of the house where you see the stairs going down, for example. We went to get the file out of the Justice Palace in Brussels, where we went to look for the pictures. How did it look like internally? There were a lot of pictures taken because it was a body that was burned inside, and how the body was killed, and how it was like with kind of iron. I don't remember the details anymore, but with iron stuff at certain places in the body. And if you looked at the pictures from the, it was not a corpse anymore, it was burnt. You saw these irons at that specific point in time.
Right.
Rudy Hoskins and his team became increasingly convinced that Regina Loof had witnessed the gruesome murder of Christine Van Hees. All of her testimony was witnessed by several officers and even magistrates, and it was meticulously recorded. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as a Freedom of Information Act request for such material in Belgium, but I was able to get my hands on the transcripts. What you're about to hear is a reading from transcripts of Regina Loof's testimony. Warning, this is extremely disturbing.
There was a drawing of names to decide, for example, which one of the two girls were going to suffer.
Who was the second girl?
Christine.
What happened to Christine?
She was sacrificed. She screamed so much for someone to hear her.
What made her scream?
The true Nihal and his wife. They tortured her. They tied her up and spread her legs on the table. She couldn't even defend herself. They put something inside of her. They were hurting her and raping her. And they burn her.
They what?
They burn her.
Police were astounded by what they were hearing. She hadn't made a direct connection to the Christine Van Hees case, but her descriptions of the circumstances of this terrifying experience were strikingly similar to the infamous cold case. What made this difficult for police was that Regina Loof had herself been a victim, and she was dealing with her own trauma at the time. The horrible things that happened to her over the years made questioning her very difficult. There were many long pauses where she would just shut down. Sometimes these bouts of silence could last as long as an hour.
She must have read it somewhere.
Yeah.
She must have had access to the judicial file, or she must have known a lawyer, or she must have been there. That was not clear for us. So what we did is we did a house search in her house to find, because we also thought, hey guys, she must have read that somewhere or had contact with somebody. So we did a house search. We went to every page, to every book. Is there something in a book, in a newspaper, an old magazine where she could have read it? We didn't find anything. But still, there were a lot of things that we could check and prove. And at a certain point in time, I would say we started believing.
I remember it like it's a film in my head. I can close my eyes and see every little details of that house where she was murdered. It was a sort of bondage. So her legs and her hands and her throat were connected with the same rope. And when she moved, she strangled herself. Yeah.
By the time of these interrogations, the old mushroom farm and adjoining house had been demolished. So investigators reached out to the family who had lived there beforehand. A man and his brother who had grown up there were convinced that Regina Loof must have been there before, based on her description of the property. These are his words, not his voice.
It was two houses that had been combined into a single dwelling with a unique passage of stairs and hallways. No one could describe it unless they'd been there. There was a hallway joining two houses, and she drew a picture of the doors inside. They were antique doors, and she drew the moldings. She described the wallpaper and the front step. I don't know who could have described it so accurately if they hadn't been there. I don't know Regina Louf. I've never met her. All I know is that based on her description of the mushroom farm and the house, I'm sure that she had to have been there. My brother and I both agree on this. We're absolutely sure and certain that she had to have been there to describe it as she did.
I was able to track down another one of the ex-gendarmes named Aimé Bill, who worked on a team investigating this case. Aimé is now retired and based in the south of France. Prior to working on the case, he had a stellar reputation as a heavy lifter with extreme attention to detail. Here's a translation of the key points from our interview.
If you look at the old case file for the murder at the mushroom farm, you'll see that way back in 1987, before Regina Louf's testimony, an informant told the police that if they wanted to solve the case, they should look at a bar called the Dolo. The Dolo was an infamous bar frequented by the mafia, politicians, police, and, above all, Niul, who was known as a regular customer there, before it was closed down and the owners were charged with facilitating prostitution. There were other things in the file that pointed towards Niul and Dutroux. For one, we know that Christine Van Hees was a regular visitor to the ice skating rink where Marc Dutroux was hanging out in the 80s, and that one of her friends testified that she had a relationship with someone named Marc from Charleroi. This same friend later said that she recognized two old photos of Dutroux from the early 1980s as someone she had seen in the presence of Christine. Christine also frequented the swimming pool in Etterbeek, in the same building where Nihul's radio station was based. At the time, police were very focused on a group of punk rockers who sometimes hung out at the mushroom farm. The initial tip pointing towards these punk rockers actually came from a colleague of Nihul's at the radio station. So that's how the whole investigation into the punk started. The judge responsible for the Champignonnière case and also responsible for closing down our investigation around Regina Louf had once represented Niul's wife as a lawyer, and his sister was the godmother of Niul's child. So, we have an informant pointing to a place where Niul spent almost every evening. We know the victim was spending a lot of time in places where Niul and Dutroux also spent time. And the person who led police to investigate the punks was actually an associate of Niul's. When you combine all this with Regina Louf's testimony, it looks very suspicious for Niul.
If Regina Louf was telling the truth, Marc Dutroux was involved with Michel Nihul in abducting, abusing, and murdering children in the mid-1980s. We know that Dutroux was indeed actively abducting young girls at this time. But Nihul is an important element here, because he was never convicted of involvement with Dutroux's crimes.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
The official story from Belgian authorities is that Marc Dutroux was an isolated predator who abducted children for his own perverted reasons, using only low-level accomplices. But I interviewed another ex-gendarme with shocking revelations that fly in the face of the idea that Dutroux was acting alone. Jean-Pierre Adam was a gendarme assigned to the Dutroux task force just after Marc Dutroux was arrested in 1996. My co-producer Thomas and I once again found ourselves driving down to the south of Belgium to discuss some of the loose ends of this case.
I think it's over here. Number three. We saw number five, so this has got to be it, but there's two houses here, so I don't know which one it is. Here we are again in the Ardennes, believe it or not.
Enchanté! Enchanté, enfin, je vous rencontre.
Oui,
c'est
vrai. Bonjour.
Enchanté. Allez, tout droit.
Merci.
Vous avez trouvé facilement quand même?
Oui, le GPS. Ouais, avec le GPS aujourd'hui. Oui.
Installez-vous, vous
voulez. Ok, génial.
Jean-Pierre told us about a curious visit he received from Jean-Denis Lejeune a few months after his daughter, Julie Lejeune, was found murdered at Dutroux's property.
I got a visit from Jean-Denis Lejeune, who came to provide a statement with his cousin. A restaurant owner from Charleroi named Michel Pirot called them several times. He wanted to organize a benefit dinner in his restaurant near Charleroi, and all of the profits would go to the Julie and Melissa Association that was formed after Dutroux's arrest. On the last call he made to them, Pirot said that on the day of the dinner, he would reveal information about Dutroux and the girls. He would make public revelations. But he didn't want to say anything about it before. A few days later, the Lejeune family was watching TV and they saw a news bulletin about a restaurant owner from Charleroi murdered in a parking lot. So they gave me sworn statement, and the prosecutor Bourlet asked me to investigate the murder case in Charleroi. And there I interviewed witnesses who said that Pirot was going to make revelations about the Dutroux affair, and that Pirot was not the kind of guy to wimp out, and that if he said it, he'd do it.
So after threatening to go public with big revelations, Pirot was murdered in a parking lot. That's certainly suspicious in and of itself, but it gets more interesting when you hear about this man Michel Pirot's link to another lead tied to the disappearance of Julie and Melissa.
Okay,
Michel Pirot was a close friend of Roger Dupuis, and Roger Dupuis was the owner of Le Carré Blanc, a nightclub in Charleroi. And there was a witness who reported seeing Julie and Melissa on the sidewalk next to the Carré Blanc with a young man after they disappeared. The witness said she crossed paths with the two girls and a young man, and she said to herself that those are the girls she'd seen pictures of everywhere, and then when she turned around, they were gone. And it was just in front of the nightclub, Le Carré Blanc. And when Dutroux was arrested, she made the connection, and she called the police 800 number, and she confirmed all of this to me in a sworn statement.
It's not clear as to why the witness didn't immediately contact police when she recognized the girls outside of the club. But when she heard of Dutroux's arrest, she made the connection, because Dutroux's house in Charleroi with a dungeon was very close to this nightclub where she thought she saw the girls. In fact, it's less than half a mile away. So not only was Michel Pirot suspiciously murdered, there was also a report that Julie and Melissa were seen in front of a nightclub called the Carré Blanc. This club owner, Roger Dupuis, was a very rich underworld figure. Could Pirot have been planning to reveal something about these sightings and the club before he was murdered? The connections go even deeper. Again, Jean-Pierre Adam.
And it happens that another nightclub owner named Jean-Claude Masse lost his nightclub in a fire. Everything burned down. And directly afterwards, Roger Dupuis came to see him and said he had an apartment above his Carré Blanc nightclub and that Jean-Claude could stay there for free while rebuilding his own club. And in exchange, he could help out managing the Carré Blanc. And so he moved with his two kids and his wife into the apartment. And one day, the kids went up into the attic, and while playing, they broke through a thin wall. And they noticed that there was a room behind the wall. So the father arrived and saw a mattress and some tissues with blood on them and a little window with bars on it, exactly as if someone had been hidden there. I went to interview this Mr. Mass with his kids. I interviewed all of them. They even drew a map showing how to access this hiding place.
Could all of this just be attributed to coincidence? Julie and Melissa are reportedly spotted at a club less than a half a mile from De Tru's dungeon. And inside that club, there's a hidden room with bars on the window and a mattress. We know that De Tru moved many of his victims around strategically, so this does fit with his pattern. Jean-Pierre Adam followed up internally about these claims.
I, of course, requested a warrant to search the hiding place. And the judge came to me and said he wouldn't grant the warrant. He said it wasn't up to him to attack the mafia of Charleroi. A search with the forensic team to analyze all of the hairs and blood and so on would have probably found the DNA of Julie and Melissa. And I still affirm today that the reason they didn't grant me a warrant is that they were afraid to open the door to a possible wider network.
It certainly appears more than plausible that De Tru was involved with a wider human trafficking network. While circumstantial, the evidence and connections are overwhelming. If this narrative is true, it would mean that there are other accomplices, either directly or indirectly involved with kidnapping, abuse, and murder of several young girls. And most of those accomplices were never brought to justice and are likely walking freely in the world today. Meanwhile, while Inspector Jean-Pierre Adam continued to investigate the case, something happened that took everyone by surprise. Marc De Tru, the most reviled criminal in Belgian history, escaped.
C'est la stupéfaction dans l'hémicycle de la Chambre à l'annonce de la nouvelle de l'évasion cet après-midi de Marc De Tru.
C'est la personne qui ne pouvait pas s'échapper.
On fera les commentaires après, une fois qu'on aura toutes les informations. Je m'excuse, mais...
Pendant ce temps-là, Marc De Tru, lui, roule vers le Luxembourg. Il parcourra une dizaine de kilomètres.
Le Monstre is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeartRadio, hosted and executive produced by me, Matt Graves, produced by Thomas Resimont of Bubble Sound. Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay are executive producers on the behalf of Tenderfoot TV, with producer Makeup and Vanity Set. Matt Frederick and Alex Williams are executive producers on the behalf of iHeartRadio, with producer Trevor Young. Original music by Jay Ragsdale. Sound design by Cooper Skinner and Thomas Resimont. Mixed and mastered by Cooper Skinner. Cover design by Trevor Eiler. Le Monstre includes archival audio from Sonuma, RTBF Archives, and CNN Archives. Special thanks to Beck Media and Marketing, Station 16, Jeanne Savigna, and the teams at iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV. Find us on social media at monster_pod. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio or Tenderfoot TV, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com.
Ooh, is it full of chilling intrigue?
No, it's full of hot savings. CheapCaribbean.com's semi-annual sale is helping you save $200 off your next booking for 4 nights or more. Score site-wide deals to your favorite beaches in Cancun, Aruba, Jamaica, and more now through the end of April.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Let's start at CheapCaribbean.com.